Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz. It's the one still weak link in our otherwise high-performing economy, wages. They're just not growing as fast as expected, given the low unemployment rate and the recent jump in GDP. One problem may be that businesses have gotten too big. They have too much power. Think of how Amazon dominates the online marketplace and Walmart, the brick and mortar. Or think of how two pharmacies have gobbled up an industry that used to include thousands of small and independent pharmacists. Without robust competition, companies like these have less need to fight for customers or workers. Increasingly, economic leaders are considering policies to regulate these overgrown businesses in order to keep American capitalism competitive. Here to tell us more is Harvard economist Jason Furman. He served as an economic advisor to former President Obama. Jason, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Oh, it's great to have you. I mean, there's been a real groundswell of research into these sorts of questions about market concentration and its impact. What's your take?
Sure. I've been, I think, contributed to that groundswell in research for the last couple of years. And, you know, it's just a remarkable fact that throughout the economy, as you just said, you gave a few anecdotes, but you look at the data and you see exactly the same thing you just said. Throughout the economy, there are just fewer players in almost every segment of our lives. It's complicated what the reasons for that is. It has lots of different consequences, but one of the unambiguous consequences seems to be giving more power to employers, less power to workers when it comes to setting wages. And so it's shifted the share of income away from workers towards corporate profits.
I mean, you say it goes way beyond the companies we're talking about. You have an example industry. Is the one that always is sitting in your head? Like, why aren't people talking about this industry? That's where there's real concentration.
Yeah, I mean, one is the beer industry, where there's pretty much two companies now that are responsible for almost all of it. You wouldn't know that because they've bought up a lot of the smaller brands and marketed under a lot of different names. The airlines haven't done that, so there we know that it's just a couple airlines we have, and the budget airlines have basically converged and become like the premium ones. So, you know, that's another sector where we have, you know, just two sectors that we have less choice than we used to, and, you know, with consequences.
Are they big consequences or are they small? Like, can you give a sense of the scale of it? I mean, how much might it be affecting my paycheck, the average person's paycheck here in Massachusetts?
Well, this is something that economists, I think, are still trying to get their heads around, and there's not a definitive answer to that question. But I think it could be an important one, and I think it's an area that has been, you know, underexplored and underaddressed by policymakers. Like, usually when you think about wages, you think about the labor market and what you can do to the minimum wage or something like that. This says no. I mean, it not says no. It says yes, absolutely. You can still do minimum wage. But it says here's a whole other area you can add to your list. It turns out, you know, when they're doing antitrust, that might matter for your wages too. It's not just the minimum wage. It's if all the hospitals in Boston. Boston has had a lot of consolidation in the hospital sector. That's not good for the salary of nurses in the Boston area.
I mean, I can think of sort of two ways this might work. Would you tell me if there are others or if I'm getting this wrong? One would be, you know, let's stick with a hospital example. You know, you're working in one hospital. There's only one other place you can work. So if you want to go out and find an alternative job, there just aren't as many competitors for you to look for. So it's just harder. That is the two or the small number of companies control the labor market. The other would be sort of indirect. The companies don't have to innovate because it's so easy for them to get workers at relatively low prices. And if they're not innovating, then they don't get more productive. And in the long run, that hurts wages too. Am I right to be thinking about that, or is there other forces?
I think those are the two most important channels. The third channel I'd add is in some cases you've actually seen collusion. There have been cases brought against hospitals, not in this area, where they basically have an agreement to not pay nurses any more than each other, not to poach workers away from each other. And so that can exacerbate the first problem you talked about of if you don't have another option of where to work, you're going to have a harder time negotiating for pay. It's going to be even harder if all your options are colluding and coordinating with each other to avoid you getting that raise.
In some ways, this is very clear to me in the beer industry or some of the examples you're citing. It's harder to wrap my head around it in the online space. Like Amazon, right? Huge company, extremely powerful. But unlike the way I would normally think about monopolies, they don't seem to be pushing up prices. They seem to be pushing down prices. Is there something fundamentally different about the internet economy that means we just shouldn't worry about this as much?
Right. Well, throughout the economy, there's really two reasons you see this increase in concentration. Sometimes it's like you're not enforcing antitrust rules and you're allowing mergers that you didn't used to allow. That's what we've been seeing with hospitals, with airlines, with pharmacies, all the examples that you cited. Others are where something's incredibly efficient and that means it grows. That second type, you know, in some ways is less concerning, but it raises some of the, you know, same issues. People have talked about Amazon's wages and have raised concerns about those. They've raised concerns about what might happen in the future if you can't have another competitor there. But I absolutely agree with you. A lot of the reason for that rise is an enormous efficiency. So when addressing it, you want to see what you can do to keep that efficiency while addressing some of the negative side effects in the tech sector. That's really tricky.
I mean, I gather that you were recently selected to lead a government expert panel in the UK looking for ways to support competition in new tech markets. I mean, this is a new thing for you, as I understand it. Has it given you new thoughts about what we should be doing in tech markets to make sure they remain competitive?
Right. Well, we have a small group that includes economists, lawyers, technologists, and we've just started our work. We'll be reporting back next year with concrete recommendations for the United Kingdom, recommendations we hope have an influence on the United States, the European Union, and others around the world. And part of why I was excited to do this is I don't know the answer to the question. There's nothing better than being on an expert panel where you know a certain amount, but you really want to figure out the answer. And it gets back to what you said, which is part of why these digital giants have grown the way they've grown is because they're very successful innovators. They charge very low prices. But they've also grown by, you know, taking strategies to preclude other competitors, to buy up nascent challengers, and to make it harder to move from company to company. So how can you get the benefits while reducing those downsides will be what we're trying to figure out, and I'll know the answer by next year.
I guess I'll ask you then. In the meantime, there are other proposals on the table for how to deal with this. Last week, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont and Congressman Ro Khanna from California's 17th District introduced a bill, Stop Bad Employers by Zeroing Out Subsidies. And I read it that way. If it sounds sort of awkward, that's because they wanted the acronym Stop Bezos. The Stop Bezos Act, aimed, of course, at stopping Amazon founder Jeff Bezos from getting too big, too powerful, pushing down wages. This is how Senator Sanders explained it.
Congressman Connor and I are proposing legislation that would have Mr. Bezos, the Walton family of Walmart, and other billionaires get off of welfare and start paying their workers a living wage. The taxpayers of this country would no longer be subsidizing the wealthiest people in this country who are paying their workers inadequate wages.
Amazon responded in part saying that, quote, Senator Sanders continues to spread misleading statements about pay and benefits, end quote. I'm sort of interested in the economics of this. Is this the kind of bill that would get at the problem or not?
You know, I understand the concern that Senator Sanders and Congressman Khanna have. If you look at their actual bill, it's less of a tax on the Waltons or on Jeff Bezos and more of a tax on hiring workers with less skill, and in particular taxing companies that hire, you know, women with children who have lower wages. And the result of that, pretty much according to policy analysts across the political spectrum from the pretty far left to the right, would be that you're going to hire fewer of those people. Companies aren't going to hire women with children anymore because they're afraid that they'll end up getting taxed with it. So I don't think this would take back any money from the people it's intended to. Instead, it would discourage hiring, lower wages, and I think it's really the wrong way to address the issue.
That does sound bad. I mean, if nothing else, it's a reminder that sometimes bills written with good intentions have unexpected, unintended, or can have unexpected, unintended negative consequences. Do you fear similarly unexpected, unintended consequences from, say, new regulatory regime? Like, let's say the government went about this by returning to the age of trust busting. Are there similar concerns there about possible unintended side effects?
You know, I should say one more thing on the Sanders-Khanna. You know, I think one lesson here is rather than do some Rube Goldberg, you know, try to get at something through a back door, just do it directly. You know, you want to tax those people? Raise taxes. You want people paid more? Raise the minimum wage. There's a direct way to do this that I think would be a lot better. I think with regulation, you always need to worry about unintended consequences. You always need to worry about something that sounds good that turns out to be bad. But I don't think you want to worry so much that you never want to act, because you can always come up with some story or something, you know, unintended consequence you worry about. You have to ask, how serious is it? How likely is it? And how does that compare to the status quo? And is there a better way to do it? You know, with the bill we just talked about, there's clearly a better way to do it. In some other areas, you know, if you're making a decision about whether to let a tech giant buy another company, you know, you can't really be sure, but maybe we want to err on the side of fewer of those acquisitions going forward.
How about if we're considering letting a tech giant open up a new shop in town? Amazon, right? They've been scouring the country for the best place to open a new headquarters, and cities have been offering them nice packages to lure them to their region. Is that something cities should even be doing?
Cities should not be offering them those sorts of packages, because there's a real danger of what's called a winner's curse, that everyone bids up until the person who wins is the person who bid too much. Amazon is also more sophisticated than most of the city governments they're dealing with at the other end of this transaction. And this is a, you know, example of precisely what goes wrong in, you know, urban planning. You know, that being said, do I think if, you know, we didn't have to offer Amazon anything and they showed up here in Boston, I'm, you know, patriotic citizen of my new hometown, moved here a year ago, would be perfectly happy for it to win a contest. I'm afraid, though, what the cost of that winning might be.
I'm almost embarrassed. You keep giving me such good segues. You just moved here to Boston from D.C. You spent a lot of time in D.C., and I feel, while I have you on the phone, I have to ask how you feel watching the administration, the Trump administration, and the cabinet that has taken over from the administration that you served. I mean, the chaos that you see emanating from the White House, or the description of fear and chaos that has come out in Bob Woodward's book, in the anonymous op-ed. Do you have responses to this that draw on your own experience in the White House?
I mean, my job for the last 3.5 years of the Obama administration was to give President Obama the best possible economic analysis. That was always an input into a decision. He'd have to figure out if something could pass Congress, you know, how it would fit into the overall priorities, trade-offs, et cetera. But he never made a decision without taking that analysis seriously. We wrote him a memo. He'd read it beginning to end, and we'd get back an underlined version and stars and notes in the margin, so we'd even know what he was thinking as he read it. I can't imagine that this president does any of that. Maybe the least of the problems we have in this country. But as somebody that really believes in the importance of doing serious, sober analysis, understanding trade-offs, the fact that I don't think that's happening right now is, you know, one of the many contributors to, you know, I think, a set of problems that we have in this country.
Well, that's Jason Furman. He's a professor of economics at Harvard University, and he served as chair of the Council of Economic Advisors in the Obama White House. Thank you so much for joining us, Jason.
Great talking to you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Evan Horowitz, and this is Radio Boston.